similar to those of COVID-19, such as fever, cough, sore throat, loss of taste, or smell, you should take a rapid home screening test. If you test positive, isolate yourself at home and please follow the self-isolation instructions. If you don't have a rapid home screening test, please self-isolate for the recommended period. Visit quebec.ca/self-isolating for complete instructions on how to protect yourself and others. A message from the gouvernement du Québec.
The following is a previously broadcast program.
Vision Radio on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal and on www.ckut.ca on the World Wide Web. News, interviews, and music featuring the voices of prisoners, their allies, and supporters. Tune into the Prison Radio Show on the fourth Friday of every month between 11 a.m. and noon, and every second Thursday of the month between 5 and 6 p.m. To get involved in Prison Radio, or if you need to access past programs, email prison@ckut.ca.
Yes, rehabilitation.
I wonder if you know what the word means. Do you? It comes from the Latin root habilis. The definition is to invest again with dignity. You consider that part of your job, Harvey, to give a man back the dignity he once had? Your only interest is in how he behaves. You'll conform to our ideas of how you should behave.
You're listening to the Prison Radio Show. My name is Yasmin, and I'll be your host for today. We would like to acknowledge that CKUT is located on unceded Haudenosaunee, Anishinaabeg, Abenaki, and Mohawk territories. The Ganyagahaga Nation is recognized as the custodians of the lands and the waters on which we're airing this show over the airwaves today. We'd also like to wish all of our listeners a happy Black History Month. Every year on the Prison Radio Show, we celebrate Black History Month in different ways, from acknowledging and discussing the over-incarceration and over-policing and police brutality that's too often fatal that targets Black Canadians. Today, we will take the time to read the names of Black Canadians who have been killed by police. But we will also ask you, do you know when we started to celebrate Black History Month in so-called Canada? And do you know, so to answer some of the questions about Black History Month that I just posed to find out, I will get right to it. And I'll let all of our listeners know that if you go to refinery29.com, you'll find really amazing slides and a piece all about incredible Black Canadian women that you may not have heard of, but that you really should read about and be inspired by, because they're important figures in Canadian history and in our present life in Canada. There's a quote, "Being the first Black feels good, yes, but more than that, it says to others and to ourselves that Blacks can be in every place in society." That's a quote by the Honorable Jean Augustin, who gave that quote to the Globe and Mail in 2002, right after she was appointed as Canada's Secretary of State for multiculturalism and the status of women, making her the first Black woman in cabinet. She would go on to achieve a few more firsts, including becoming the first Black woman elected to Canada's House of Commons, where she pushed forward a motion to acknowledge February as Black History Month. Augustine is a big reason that we have the month dedicated to celebrating Black history in this country at all, and she's built her career not only on being the first, but uplifting the Black community so that there could be a second and third and so on. She hasn't just climbed the ladder, but she sent it back down so others could climb too. There's a lot more I could say about her, but in order to talk about some others, the website also talks about Violet King, who became the first Black female lawyer in Canadian history, which seemed like an impossible dream, but it was realized. And Rosemary Brown, the campaign slogan of the outgoing president of the United States, stood for hatred and bigotry and was used as a tool for both. In 1975, when race relations were supposedly way worse than they are now, Rosemary Brown ran for the leadership of the federal NDP with the slogan, "Brown is beautiful." Now that is a campaign slogan. And around the same time, Brown said this: "To be Black and female in a society which is both racist and sexist is to be in the unique position of having nowhere to go but up." Decades later, Brown's quote is still painfully relevant. In a racist and sexist society, Brown became the first black woman elected to a Canadian legislature and the first woman to run for leadership of a federal party. She spent 14 years as an MLA for the NDP in British Columbia, working to remove sexism in the school curriculum. Rosemary Brown was a staunch feminist who fought for intersectionality before it became a buzzword. And after she retired from politics in 1988, she taught women's studies at Simon Fraser University, educating the next generation of black feminists until her death in 2003. She worked vigorously for the rights of women, specifically black women in this country and around the world. Black women still have nowhere to go but up in a society that continues to be, unfortunately, sexist and racist. But we've got Rosemary Brown's legacy and her words to inspire us to keep going. And the website poignantly points us towards Jennifer Hodge Da Silva, who unfortunately died quite young. But I think Jennifer's work was very relevant to some of the things we discuss on the show. It says the Ontario Human Rights Commission released a report in 2018 that proved something like many black people in this country already knew. Black people are more likely than white people to be injured or killed by the Toronto police officers. The tensions between the black community and the police in Toronto is nothing new, but police brutality is still often seen as an American problem. In 1983, Jennifer Hodge Da Silva shed light on what is definitely a Canadian problem with her documentary, Home Feeling, A Struggle for Community, about the tension between law enforcement and the predominantly African-Canadian Jane and Finch neighborhood. The film features raw and revealing interviews with the police and members of the community. And 35 years later, the film is still being taught in schools and universities, and black people are still suffering at the hands of police. I'd like to highlight that the story, it's entitled The Incredible Black Canadian Women You Should Know. And I wanted to point out the journalist who wrote the piece that I was reading from is named Kathleen Newman Bremang. And she's done an excellent job. So I highly encourage our listeners to check out Refinery 29. Look her up, you would find the story. The last woman that I'd like to highlight that she featured has a particular importance for Canada, especially Quebec. Her name was Marie-Joseph Angelique. Some of our listeners may be familiar with the story. Marie Angelique's life is one of the stories that made me mad when I hadn't heard about it in history class. So I had a similar experience to the author of this piece. I found out about it through a book by Dr. Afua Cooper called The Hanging of Angelique. So she was a black woman enslaved by a woman named Thérèse Duquin de Francheville in Montreal. Yes, white women owned slaves in Canada too. And the Canadian Encyclopedia posits Angelique was first sold into slavery in Portugal, then bought by a French merchant at age 20. And when that horrible French dude died, he left his slave to his wife, the aforementioned horrible French woman, who renamed her Marie-Joseph Angelique after their dead daughter. The repulsive details don't stop there. She then forced Angelique to have three children, who all died as infants, with another slave, Jacques Césaire. And Angelique is said to have been in a relationship with a white indentured laborer from France named Claude Thibault. In 1973, when Angelique asked for her freedom and was denied, de Francheville, who was planning to sell her to another slave owner in Quebec City, who was then going to sell her to the West Indies, when Angelique found out this news, she threatened to burn down Francheville's house. Together, Angelique and her lover, Thibault, tried to run away but were caught en route to Portugal via New England. And Angelique was returned to her owner but was still loudly threatening to burn stuff down. And in April 1734, there was a mass fire in Montreal destroying 46 buildings. Angelique was charged with arson for allegedly starting a fire that led to the damage in the city, though she denied the accusation until she was brutally tortured into confessing. She refused to give up Thibault's name, even though the judges argued that they had set the initial blaze together. But there was no proof, let me add. And Angelique was executed by hanging after days of torture, where she swore she set the fires herself and begged for mercy. Thibault fled, leaving Angelique to face the trial alone. Angelique has been hailed as a symbol of black resistance and a painful reminder that this country is not absolved of the atrocities laid against black bodies during that era. But Angelique's legacy is complicated. Some still believe that she did not start the fires. There were no witnesses, but that she was used as a scapegoat since she was an outspoken Black woman. Others attest that the burning of Montreal in 1734 was Angelique's final act of defiance against a life she didn't deserve. Whatever you believe, Marie-Joseph Angelique's strength and resilience, in spite of unspeakable circumstances, is undeniable. Today, we will be featuring an interview with Ayo Ogunremi, a McGill student and vice president of external affairs, the SMU, the Student Society of McGill University, who recently drafted and passed a motion to adopt a position on institutions of public safety, like police and prisons, and what he referred to as an abolitionist motion. But first, we have some announcements and some more commemorating for Black History Month. So Robin Maynard and Pascal de Virlis recently launched a website called Building the World We Want and released the National Defunding Document, a roadmap to police-free futures in Canada. And you can access all of this at a website called buildingtheworldwewant.com. So this website is a home for political education and learning about abolition and movement work, part abolitionist laboratory, part movement and resource-sharing hub. It is an offering in the service of community-led efforts to build safety differently and to imagine and build a world without surveillance, police, and incarceration. Part of Building the World We Want is a public education series that brings together the brilliant work happening on the ground by grassroots organizers. The series lifts up frontline struggles, working to dismantle and defund harmful institutions and build new life-affirming institutions that can support our collective safety. Based in Canada, Building the World We Want is a platform that sheds light on some of the abolitionist world building happening every day, organizing in support of the largely Black and Indigenous people living in encampments, work across the country to get police out of schools, the prisoner-led struggle to release prisoners in the context of the COVID-19 outbreaks. Building the World We Want is an offering and a building and learning space to help lift up grassroots movements work and leadership, and to grow our collective knowledge toward building abolition in our lifetime. And they will be producing resources, hosting monthly public panels, and organizing abolition labs for organizers and activists to Skillshare. So I highly encourage our listeners to check that out. It's buildingtheworldwewant.com, and you can sign up for their email list and see all the events that they're putting on. I believe the first event they had was yesterday, or on the 25th of February. So this is the announcement coming from them. Presently incarcerated people in Quebec's Red Zone live under conditions that are inhuman, as in the Bordeaux prison, where a number of inmates are holed up in their cells, 23 hours, 24 hours, added to the fact that the number of inmates are already over the capacity. They don't deserve this kind of treatment, regardless of the crime they committed in the past. TC-CSN, and this TITC-CSN is organizing a socially distanced event in front of the Bordeaux prison to prioritize the vaccination of inmates and demand that their isolation time be counted as double during the time of their sentence. So the same group is calling for all syndicates, associations, groups, etc. to be there in great numbers in front of the Bordeaux facility on Saturday, March 6th at 2 p.m. You're listening to the Prison Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM, 91.7 on cable, and CKUT.ca. We're going to take a short musical break to play the song Man in the Hills by the artist Burning Spear. And this song goes out to Rashid. And this song came to us through our listener comment line. Thanks for requesting songs on our listener comment line. Please send us more.
Come along, my brother, come along. Let us do the things we're supposed to do for our mother. Come along, my sister, come along too. But if we should live up in there. If we should live up in the year,
and if we should be walking the hills,
live up in the hills, the hills.
And if we should live up in the hills,
my brother, go to the river to keep
carry the water. The water. My sister wash up the dishes. She even goes to the shop and bring in the groceries. When my smaller brother run around and pick up the bramble to keep the fire blazing.
On February 24th, 2021, Solidarity Across Borders, or Libérer les Tous, held a press conference. Migrant detainees held at the Laval migrant prison are calling for their immediate release amidst a COVID-19 outbreak. To date, 4 cases have been confirmed. One detainee has initiated an indefinite hunger strike. His name is Marlon, and this is his declaration. I declared an unlimited hunger strike on Monday, February 15th. It has now been 6 days. I am doing this as a form of protest because my fundamental rights, such as my right to health, are being violated. I contracted COVID-19 at the Laval migrant prison because of being confined to small spaces and by being exposed to the personnel at the center who come and go and expose us detainees to the virus and who do not respect sanitary measures, for example, by removing their masks. Contracting COVID-19 went from being a risk to a reality for me, and now we are 4 people who have been infected. They have us isolated in solitary confinement without care, and I believe that our lives are at risk because we do not have any way of protecting ourselves from the virus. Now that we know it is present in the center, there is no way that it will disappear. There is an inadequate ventilation, inadequate hygiene in the rooms, which are dirty, and since we are in solitary confinement, we do not even have a way of washing our clothes. All of this is leading me to fear for my life, and I am experiencing depression and trauma. I am hoping for a miracle from God that anyone who is listening will have pity on us and free us from this prison, which is needed to avoid the spread of this virus among migrant detainees, leading to many potentially irreversible health consequences. Millions of people have died across the globe. Who is to say that we won't be next? We are human beings with lives to live and dreams to fulfill. Please respect our human rights. So migrants are often detained, and this is like a statement from Solidarity Across Borders. So migrants are often detained at the Laval migrant prison if they lack identity documents or if the Canada Border Service agencies believe that they may not show up for deportation. And last spring, the Laval migrant prison was the site of a courageous 8-day hunger strike, which generated coast-to-coast support and resulted in the release of most detainees at the time. Now the migrant prison is filling up once again, and although CBSA has not resumed deportations from Quebec, it has resisted calls to release detainees. At the same time, the federal government refuses to respond to ongoing demand for status for all and to implement a regularization program for all undocumented migrants, which is the real reason these detainees' lives are at risk. At present, COVID-positive detainees report being held in solitary confinement, kept in small cells with tiny windows. They are only allowed to shower or make phone calls. Some detainees report that their symptoms are not taken seriously, while others have received COVID-19 tests but are not given the results, leaving them in fear and uncertainty about their health. While detainees remain in solitary cells, guards continue to come and go from the institution, exposing detainees to a higher risk of contracting COVID-19. The detainees call also comes in the context of the rising cases at the provincial and federal prisons across the country. At Bordeaux prison, around 125 prisoners have contracted COVID-19, and the entire prison has been locked down, leaving prisoners confined to their cells for 23 to 24 hours a day with no showers and little access to outside support. We join our voices to the growing movement demanding the abolition of prisons and police and the carceral logic that underpins them. Solitary confinement has been widely denounced as a form of torture, and it is unacceptable that such measures are being used to contain the outbreak. Detainees in detention centers and in prisons must be immediately released. Hashtag free them all. Hashtag status for all. And what can our listeners do? So they say calls and emails. Contact government officials to demand the immediate release of all detainees. You can direct phone calls and emails to the Federal Minister of Public Safety, Bill Blair. And his email is bill.blair, and that's spelled B-L-A-I-R, @parl.gc.ca. You can also call at 613-995-0284. And if you go on the Solidarity Across Borders website, solidarityacrossborders.org, you can find your member of parliament by clicking on a link there and send an email. So the struggle of the detainees demands our urgent solidarity. So use the hashtag hashtag free them all, and this is for social media, and hashtag status for all, along with hashtag hunger strike Laval, to show your support for the struggle on social media. We encourage you to tag Bill Blair, Marco Mendocino, and Justin Trudeau, and other government officials. The struggle of the detainees demands our urgent solidarity and support. We will continue to post updates over the coming days. Stay tuned for the upcoming actions. As part of our celebration of Black History Month, we also need to remember, and we are going to take a moment to list, to name Black Canadians who have been killed, who have died, who have been killed at the hands of the police. So there's a lot, so I'm going to name some. There's so many more. Sadly, there's very long lists. 29-year-old Afro-Indigenous Toronto woman who was dead after falling from the 24th floor of a High Park apartment building on May 27th, and her mother says police pushed her. DeAndre Campbell, 26, an African man, was shot and killed in Brampton, Ontario, by an unnamed Peel Regional police officer on April 7th. Campbell, who lived with mental health issues, called police for help. Machir Madu, 43, an African man who immigrated to Canada from South Sudan, who was shot and killed in Winnipeg, Manitoba apartment building, in his Winnipeg, Manitoba apartment building, by an unnamed Winnipeg police officer on February 23rd, 2019. Nicholas Gibbs, 23, black man, was shot and killed in Montreal, Quebec, by an unnamed police officer on August 21st, 2018. Orlando Brown, a black man, who 32, who died in Barrie, Ontario, the custody of an unnamed Barrie police officers on June 22nd, 2018. Police had arrested Brown at a traffic stop and shot him four times with a taser. Pierre Corleone, 58, and a black man who immigrated to Canada from Haiti, was shot and killed in Montreal, Quebec, by Montreal police officer Jimmy Charles Michon on June 27th, 2017. Abdurrahman Abdi, 37, a black man who had immigrated to Canada from Somalia, was fatally assaulted in Ottawa, Ontario, by Ottawa police officers Daniel Moncian and David Ware in front of his apartment building on July 24th, 2016. Bonnie Jean-Pierre, 46, a black man who was shot in Montreal, Quebec by Montreal police officer Christian Gilbert on March 31st, 2016. This list comes from a website called Pyrisense. It's spelled P-Y-R-I-S-C-E-N-C-E. So that's Pyrisense.ca. And it's Desmond Cole who had put together that list. So I just wanted, in case folks wanted to take a look at it. And like I said, that this was from 2020. So I'm sure that there's been more killings that I haven't mentioned. And I know that there's been more killings since the time this list was put together that I haven't mentioned. And a lot more before that, unfortunately. You're listening to the Prison Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM and www.ckut.ca. We are going to take another musical break, and we will be back with our interview with Io from SMU.
Ay, 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 ay
You're listening to the Prison Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM. That was a request that we got for a song by Marijan Rajab. And the song was called Dunia Yasasa Imani Imekwisha. And I really like that song. I didn't know it before. And I want to thank the people that are calling into our listener comment line and requesting songs. Please keep doing that. At the end of the show, we'll repeat the listener comment line number and encourage your friends and anyone else to request songs, and you can do shout outs. So I wanted to make sure also for the song earlier by Burning Spear that the song was going out to Rashid. And now we are going to feature our interview with Ayo Ogunremi, a McGill student and the Vice President of External Affairs at SMU, the Student Society McGill University, who recently drafted and passed a motion to adopt a position on institutions of public safety, like prisons and police. And when we spoke, when he first told me about it, and I said I wanted to interview him, he referred to it as an abolitionist motion. Here's our interview with Ayo. For joining me on Prison Radio Show today to talk about this, the motion regarding a position on institutions of public safety. I was wondering if you could just introduce yourself to our listeners.
Yeah, sure. So, first of all, thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. So my name is Ayo Ogunremi. I am the VP External of the SMU, which is the Student Society of McGill University, which is SMU's largest student association. And so we represent all of the undergraduate students on McGill's downtown campus, which is just over 24,000 students. That's a bit about me.
Can you explain what SMU is for those of our listeners who might not know?
Okay, sure. So yeah, I mean, SMU, from the most technical point of view, SMU is an accredited student association, which means that it's a nonprofit corporation, but it has a specific purpose, which is to represent the students' interests. So we're like a student association or a student union that has a particular kind of recognition by the government and also by McGill University. So kind of on that basis, we are able to levy fees from our students or adopt positions and advocate on behalf of our students regarding a lot of different things. So obviously things like the cost of education and university assessment, but also other more socio-political issues like climate justice and then also policing in prisons.
Great. And could you just break down the acronym SMU? It's SSMU. Oh, so if you tell our listeners what that means.
Yeah, so SSMU stands for Students Society of McGill University.
Awesome. Thanks. Just like to make sure everything is super digestible on the show so that no one's listening and wondering what we're talking about. Right. So on to this amazing motion that you got passed. I'm really happy you're here today to talk to us about it and to tell the listeners about it, because I think it's important that this kind of action is taking place, not just on the streets when folks are protesting and not just in grassroots movements, but also in every different institution where it's possible. So I commend you on your work. And I was wondering if you could give
our listeners a little background on the motion in a nutshell, and then we'll talk more in details about different aspects of it, like consultations and reactions to it.
Right. Yeah, sure. Okay. So so the immediate context is just that a couple of weeks ago, the SMU Legislative Council, which is SMU's body that makes decisions about the sort of advocacy and the political orientations of the SMU, voted overwhelmingly, in fact, to approve this motion to adopt a position that I wrote, which is called the Position on Institutions of Public Safety. And so by that, I mean particularly prisons, jails, and policing, and the whole kind of ecosystem of the criminal justice system. So the position basically responds to the upsurge of awareness about just about like policing and prisons and their disproportionate impact on marginalized people. And so obviously that was a very, very strong uprising throughout like the entire continent of North America and also across the world, in response to several police killings over the summer and fall of 2020, as well as lots of strikes and just actions by incarcerated people across North America. So I mean, on the side of SMU, we had released a statement condemning anti-Black racism and police violence at the beginning of the summer, just after the deaths of just after the police killing of George Floyd, but we also Regis Korczynski Paquette in Toronto. But really, since there hadn't really been like a very concrete establishment of a commitment to advocacy or support for or just solidarity with people who are campaigning on issues regarding policing, prisons, and jails. And so what this like motion and the position is trying to do is to just kind of set out SMU's beliefs and commitments regarding what I described as institutions of public safety, so that places SMU's position in what I would say is an abolitionist position, even if it doesn't like actually specifically use the word abolition within the motion. But yeah, the intention was to develop a fairly robust kind of basis for SMU to support that kind of advocacy, and it passed, so that was really good. And it also passed at the board of directors last week, which is just another like requirement.
So I was wondering if you could talk about how you had, when we were speaking about this kind of in passing, you had said the day it passed, you were really excited and we were meeting on a different basis. And you said that you got an abolition motion passed. And I was super excited and said I wanted to interview you about it. But you also in the same breath or like right after had mentioned that you couldn't actually put the word abolition in the title or anything. We're in it because now I'll let you take it away. So why couldn't you? And was that sort of a negotiation with other people that you were drafting this with, or was that your own sort of like foresight? If you could just speak a little bit on that issue.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so I think it was decided by like amongst myself and some of the other groups that, or some of the other individuals that helped draft this motion. The way I said it to you, like in our meeting, was I passed an abolitionist motion. I described it as a position or a motion regarding institutions of public safety, because I thought that calling it a position on abolition would scare the other councillors. So that's like obviously not obviously when we're talking about like social justice issues and like being and standing in solidarity with and like making these and trying to establish commitments and solidarity, like it's obviously not like always or even not always going to be like a factor to consider that like, okay, some people might take issue with this wording, or that some people might object to how it's described. But I think that the reason that I thought that it was potentially appropriate to have it kind of on the, like, just described as position on institutions of public safety is like, well, I guess one is that the position is like treats on more than just abolition as like a strategy and an orientation. And then also I think that like just kind of with respect to like SMU and SMU's legislative council, I know that there is like a lot of there is like really significant, there's really significant, I guess, it's kind of, I guess, I would just say like, in terms of, SMU as a, SMU's position, SMU's action as a political decision-making body is generally like, generally kind of has to try to do as much as it can in terms of advocating on specific issues like this in a way that is understandable to everyone, or that is understandable to us, to like the most the most people possible, obviously because like it's a representative organization, and so because as well, I mean, my impression is that, or like my understanding is that with regard to abolition, the notion of abolition is a very there's a lot of kind of meaning behind the word abolition. In terms of just history, in terms of philosophy as well, and also just in terms of the connection between abolition the abolition of slavery in the 20th century, and then like this 21st century abolition takes its roots directly from that like 20th century, 19th century movement. So basically, I guess I'm trying to say like in terms of trying to make it understandable to as many people as possible, because it's just a position where like the position isn't really something that like is going to be citing sources or citing other people kind of thing. It's just going to be articulating clearly like this is kind of how we think about like X, Y, and Z, issue or topic, I thought that it would be, I thought that like the way, I thought that it could be said in different words, basically. So yeah. That said, so with it, within like the other documents that I brought to support this motion, so I and my political I and the Smooth political researcher drafted a brief just kind of explaining and articulating the reasoning behind this that was we articulated like much more clearly sort of like the relationship between this motion and abolition and also defunding movements.
Thanks for that. Yeah, and there definitely is a connection from the, I think, the movement for the abolition of slavery and then the abolition for the carceral system and like defunding the police and, you know, getting rid of prisons. And there's definitely a connection. And I see that in the sort of numbered, like in the appendix, the proposed position, there's a lot of really great stuff in there that I think definitely would be like a lot of the same things that abolitionists today are fighting for. So it's great that you were able to get some of those in. I'm just going to read a few of them out for the listeners. So it says that the SMU, in its commitment to leading in matters of human rights and social justice and in advocacy on institutions of public safety, the SMU believes that policing disproportionately harms marginalized people, including but not limited to Indigenous peoples, Black people, people of color, sex workers, transgender and non-binary people, queer people, people with disabilities, women, low-income and unhoused people, neurodivergent people, and undocumented immigrants. And I feel like it's this motion is quite inclusive. It talks about decriminalizing prostitution. It talks about the decriminalization of drugs. It talks about gendered and sexual violence. There's a lot of different things, different sort of issues that are like a wide cross-section of issues, which I really appreciated. And then when I went back and looked at who you consulted with, I see that there's quite a robust sort of cohort. So I'll just, some of the consultations that were completed were with relevant stakeholders like the Equity Commissioners, the Indigenous Affairs Commissioner, the Black Affairs Commissioner, the Anti-Sexual Violence and Mobilization and Advocacy Commissioner, the Anti-Violence Coordinators, the Mental Health Advocacy Coordinator, the Affordable Student Housing Committee, the Vice President of University Affairs, and the Union for Gender Empowerment and the Black Students Network. So it's a lot of different groups. So I was just wondering if you could talk a little bit about the consultation process and what that was like, and if you had pushback from any folks along the way, or if it was easy to work with people, or just like what it was like doing the consultations. And
sure. Yeah, I can go directly to that. I guess so with the consultations, that was a really good process, really. I got some good I was able to get some good new points, especially from the Indigenous Affairs Commissioner, and the Anti-Sexual Violence Mobilization and Advocacy Commissioner, a very long title. I think like each of the different people who I was able to speak with, the consultations were either like in brief meetings or just kind of online. So I shared the motion with them, and we were just kind of going back and forth making comments for 4 days. The most substantive changes were, like I said, regarding especially regarding Indigenous the points that treat specifically on Indigenous people. So there's 2.1, and then I think one later, and then others were just kind of like things about wording, about like does this kind of just wording and semantic things that just helped to clarify everything, which was very helpful. In terms of pushback, like within the consultations, there wasn't really pushback. It was just kind of it was kind of negotiating like lots of different comments and different like ideas about how kind of something could be like better or worse worded. But yeah, with all of these kind of stakeholders, I guess, it was very kind of collaborative, which is great.
And then how did you decide who would be included in the consultation process?
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, I guess, so the, so this position I developed from the, from Montreal's Defund the Police Coalition. So that's to defund the SPVM. And then also, and then also a variety of sex worker organizations, some operating, some that kind of work within Montreal, and then others that just work elsewhere. And then I think also some information from the defund.ca kind of like hub for all of these other different local organizations. So I was just kind of, I tried to compile like the information from these different organizations regarding like the disproportionate impact of policing and just the carceral system in general on these groups. And so then tried to break it down into this. And so it was then on the basis of the the kind of topics outlined in these by these organizations who are like coalition, and also just to add, like the Defund the Police Coalition is a coalition of like a variety of these of organizations representing different groups. So for instance, representing sex workers, representing Indigenous peoples, representing people with disabilities, etc. So I just kind of, all of these consultations were done with people within like the SMU, within the SMU or McGill ecosystem. So like all of these commissioners are SMU staff members. And then like some of these groups, the Black Students Network, the Union for Gender Empowerment, these are like SMU services, student and like community-based groups. So so I was just kind of, I just tried to reach out to all of the different groups who represent these groups affected like within the SMU kind of ecosystem. And
great. And so you said that you looked to the websites defund.ca and also the Defund the SPVM. So were you working with people from those groups, or more just like using the resources that they had available?
Right. Yeah. So it was mostly using the resources that they had available. I had worked with them a little bit over like the summer and the fall while I was still around in the fall. I had worked with and kind of been in conversations with the folks from the Defund the SPVM. So I kind of was familiar with like their orientations and their kind of priorities and stuff. We also looked at, I guess, also important to mention, so the Defund the SPVM has created an alternative budget to the SPVM's budget that was approved in like, I think the beginning of December of last year.
Right.
Well, the whole city budget. So that was another thing. I did also reach out to the Defund the SPVM group to like get feedback, but I didn't hear back, unfortunately, like by the time I needed to submit it. But I thought anyway that like I was quite confident that the position was like pretty faithful to the demands of that coalition.
Great. And how has this been received? I noticed that I think it had unanimous support, like 29 in favor when I'm seeing results of the vote. So if you could just talk about that. Were you surprised? I know you were really happy the day that it happened, but were you, what was that like? And
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I mean, So the results were 29 in favor. I think that was one abstention that it's just not on the on the record right now. But I went back to listen to the to listen to the live stream just to be sure, and I remember hearing, and it said that there was, the speaker mentioned there was one abstention. But yeah, there was no like actual formal opposition, which was great. That was really awesome. It was also very surprising. So the way it kind of happened was like, I presented the motion. I presented the motion as like a notice of motion, which basically means that like, this motion is gonna actually be debated upon at the next council session, which was in 2 weeks' time. So the reason that I did that was so that like all of the different councillors would actually have some time to go back and talk to their constituents and like and kind of so they can establish like what actually is their kind of position on whether they should vote yes or no to this because it just helps to make like the motions more accessible and also kind of more ultimately voted on. So I did that. I also, like I mentioned earlier, I think, created a sort of like brief that was just to sort of explain more kind of the social context with like sources and facts, just about like the nature of the carceral system and especially of policing. Which I shared with the councillors as well, like prior to the vote. So I think doing both of those really, really helped to make people to give people more time to like investigate, like why are these positions the way they are, and like what is the kind of actual sort of factual basis and like the moral basis. And so then when we actually got into the like debate and the questions and stuff, the way that like it happens on the agenda is that I present it, then we go into question period, then we go into debate, and then we go into voting. So in the question period, there was just absolutely no question. Like nobody had any questions, which I was very surprised at, because kind of like you said, it's a very wide-ranging motion. There's like different things about like immigration, about sex work, about substance use, etc. And then even in the debate, there was only one intervention, and that was to make an amendment, a very kind of minor amendment that was just basically about wording. So instead of saying that like equitable representation in the police force and greater sensitivity training will like never resolve problems, like will never resolve like the problems of the carceral system. Yeah. It said like they may be helpful, but they cannot. That's how it was kind of changed.
Right. I noticed that wording. Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. So that was the only amendment that like people wanted, that one person wanted to make. And so we just accepted that, and there was nothing else. And so we moved into voting, and there was 29 in favor and one abstention. So I was really surprised. I was so surprised. I was also even a bit disappointed, because I wanted to like advocate and kind of explain like this is like we need to just kind of say it a little bit.
Sure.
Yeah, but
go
ahead. Yeah.
So I wanted to ask something else. I noticed that what I saw come up twice in the motion was it was noted this inter-associative roundtable of student associations. It says for which this concern is an item of discussion. And I think it mentions the roundtable at another place too. Yeah. I was just wondering what that is, if you could talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, sure. So the inter-associative is kind of a... I described it as a round table. It's just a forum or assembly of different student associations within Quebec who are kind of on the more sort of like activist or combative syndicalist kind of side. So a lot of these are student associations that, like, also at the CEGEP level, like CEGEP and university student associations that were like very involved in lots of the different student strike movements of the last like 10, 15 and 20 years. And so like none of these, because there isn't at the moment like a student federation that kind of takes that sort of orientation in Quebec, this is kind of an alternative sort of forum, or this is basically a way to still like regroup these different student associations in a way that's much less formal than like a federation. So like no one is paying fees, or like we're not paying fees in the same way as we would for a federation, but we're still kind of able to meet like every month or so to kind of share propositions. So what happens is like we go to this anti-associative and like propose a proposition regarding, say, climate justice, or regarding abolition, or regarding like the cost of education. And then we'll propose, the idea is that like if it gets approved at the anti-associative, then it's to go back to all of the kind of general assemblies of these different student associations where it can be voted upon there. And so the idea for like a lot of these propositions is to develop province-wide campaigns regarding like the different topics. So so for instance, I submitted, or I helped draft a proposition on defunding the police, or just on, yeah, it was called a proposition, yeah, on defunding the police, but it was very similar to this position, but just kind of described in proposition terms. So like that we like support XYZ, that we support like local campaigns in like our city or town that do this. And yeah, that we develop like popular education campaigns regarding like defunding and police abolition.
Great. I thank you so much for being with us today. It's really great that this is going on at the McGill campus. I'm sure, and I don't know, are you aware of other motions like this at other campuses being passed as well? Have you come across that?
Yeah, so I know that there's one student association at UCAM. Their political science and law faculty, that association that has like a position like in favor of prison abolition, but that's I think a long-standing position. They've had it for like some time. And then I know that a lot of other student associations have positions against police brutality, but there isn't, like when we had our conversation in January at the anti-associative, it didn't seem, there weren't any student associations that really had kind of either, say, responded to, that had like a new position that was kind of more comprehensive and that responded to like the definitely like the increase in awareness or the increase in sort of sensitivity regarding like the carceral system. So this one I think was like fairly definitely like builds on other positions that other student associations have adopted, but I think it's kind of more wide ranging than the ones that have existed.
Yeah, it seems really, it's awesome. It's so robust and wide ranging. Do you think you'll try to, I don't want to say export.
La Chapelle Sieng Contemporaire presents Beethoven Mystic and Les Salons Acoustiques, a program about music in all its diversity.
Paper Beat Scissors, Katie Moore, Brad Barr, Sarah Paget, Thana Iyer, Cedric Danlavoie, Plants and Animals, and now, Marie-Pierre Arthur, and more.
Beginning March 23rd, the Warhol Dervish Quartet performs Beethoven Mystic, a series of concerts dedicated to five of Beethoven's last string quartets.
Following each concert, an artist from pop or contemporary music will join the quartet for a unique performance.
The fourth edition of Les Salons Acoustiques takes place March 25th, 26th, and 27th, an eclectic program providing a unique sensory exploration without microphones or speakers. A CKUT co-presentation with La Chapelle Sieng Contemporaire in partnership with Cult Montreal.
Information and tickets on lachapelle.org.
If it appears that COVID-19 symptoms like cough, fever, sore throat, and loss of taste and smell are beginning to present themselves, you can begin to self-isolate and take a rapid test at home. After getting your test results, you can learn more about proper self-isolation guidelines by visiting quebec.ca/self-isolating. This information is there to help protect you and everyone living under the same roof. All of us can make a difference, so let's keep making sure all of us are safe. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.